The Cox Plate field is coming up. The Melbourne Cup penalty for incentivise announced yesterday. It lifts him to 57. Historically, it is a formidable challenge. We're going to fully explore that with Greg Carpenter. All the hurdles that have to be overcome. Bray Sokolsky, the owner of incentivise, is about to join me.
Incentivise races clear. Two lengths in front of Persan, Great House, Nonconformist, Montefilia, followed by Chapada. But Incentivise is coming away. Four lengths in front. And Incentivise, what a star.
Melbourne Cup is Australia's race. It's nice to have a homegrown product. Born and bred in the Darling Downs of Queensland. Owned in Australia. It's going to be a great sort of fairy tale Australian story. And let's hope he's good enough to hold off the Raiders.
So that was Peter Moody with us yesterday. Bray Sokolsky is, well, he's the owner of the most exciting horse in Australia, Incentivise. Bray, welcome back to the program.
Absolute pleasure to be back, Jared. Thanks for having me.
Just give me a feel. What's it like to have the 6-4 favourite for the Melbourne Cup 2.5 weeks out?
honestly, it's hard to put into words. I don't think anyone's been in that position, obviously, for about 90 years. It's hard to fathom that a horse could be this short for a Melbourne Cup. And obviously, you know, Greg's a treatment of him with the penalty was seen by the market as fair. In my mind, it was fair. And we forge ahead to the race with confidence that he can carry the 57 kilograms to victory.
Was it a nervy wait to find out what the penalty was going to be? There's been the odd horse in the past, and it is prior to Greg's regime, that has been crueled with the penalty at this stage.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep, it was. And I thought, you know, that was the mark, but he was entitled probably to give him half a kilogram less or half a kilogram more and rightfully defend it. So I think landing right in the middle of that range is the most reasonable outcome. You know, what's interesting with this horse is he's such a freak that, you know, I'm normally a student of history and certainly of the school of thought that, you know, the past is the best predictor of the future and you have to respect history. But with this horse, in some regards, history is bunk and I'm not too fussed by, you know, what's transpired beforehand because he's doing things that no horse has done previously.
So why do you feel like that, Bray? Because he will have to be an all-time great to win the Melbourne Cup with this in the circumstances and the history that does stretch back a long period of time now.
Yeah, I just like there is no precedent for this horse. You know, his trajectory and his ability to raise the bar every single time he steps out, you know, every single one of those 9 victories, basically he's done something that leaves you scratching your head and somewhat astonished. He certainly did that on Caulfield Cup Day. And who's to say the horse can't go to yet another level again come Melbourne Cup Day? And I think the prospect of 2 miles, just the way this horse races and his engine and his lung capacity, holds no fears whatsoever for us. And if he can put them to the sword the way he did in the Caulfield Cup, but do that, you know, for 8 additional furlongs, you know, we could be scratching our head and saying that he's raised the bar again come the first Tuesday in November. So I just think he's such a unique horse, you know, very elegant. You know, he's such a champion in her own right. But what she does doesn't necessarily astonish, and it certainly doesn't raise the spectre of, you know, creating new precedent. She's, you know, in her own right, she's established an incredible CV. But what she's done as a champion is something that you could compare to other champions of the past quite comfortably. But with Incentivise and what he's doing, there's no easy comparison.
I was talking to Peter Moody about this yesterday. What sort of sense of the place that he has instantly won with the sporting public, not just the racing public, and this time of year is all about finding a hero, and he is the hero. Imagine what Caulfield would have been like if there'd been the regular crowd there when he stormed away coming to the corner.
I know, and, you know, I try to not labour on that and just obviously feel incredibly fortunate and privileged to just be part of him and be able to watch from afar. But you're right, Jared. Imagine being on track. It would have been something to behold. And yeah, I think he genuinely has captured the parts and imagination of the broader public, which I just think is fantastic for racing. And I think that whole narrative coming into the Melbourne Cup of the first horse, what, in close to 20 years, to win the double. And, you know, harping back to Farlap and, you know, him at $1.80 or whatever it was in 1930 in the midst of, you know, that once-in-a-generation crisis. And, you know, this horse in the midst of a very different crisis, but a crisis nevertheless. You know, I think that the general public are magnetised to that. And the prospect of him winning the Cup's double is, you know, truly salivating.
What was your overriding emotion on Saturday, Bray, once it was done and won in such style?
I have to say it was obviously exhilaration, you know, during the race and elation. And I think when the dust settled, I was very, very emotional because, you know, you spend so long in racing, sort of backing your judgment and putting yourself out there as an owner and making these acquisitions. And, you know, when I did come into the horse, like the first thing I did when I called Peter Moody, which was basically a cold call, was say to him, I think I found the Caulfield Cup winner this year. And he giggled. And he did convey that story post-race himself. And I think it was just that sense of achievement and fulfillment. And it was so edifying, Jared, and having, you know, everyone, family and friends around me. It was just a truly special moment. Like I said, like now, I just feel like it's a genuine privilege to be involved in this horse and his journey.
So is it different? We've been fortunate enough to share in your stories with Yes, Yes, Yes and Very Elegant and Sir Dragonair, who we'll talk about shortly. Is this particular?
Yeah, it's a very good question. I think the difference with this horse is, as you rightfully pointed out, he actually now transcends racing. And I think, you know, he has the ability to establish himself as potentially a legend of Australian sport, not just the confines of racing. And I think that's the difference. And I think the level of interest that it's generated is far beyond, you know, the previous, you know, champions that I've been associated with. So I think in some respects, this one does feel different.
And that personal sense of judgment. So the owner is a really interesting figure, and I've loved our chats because of it. Is Bart used to have the idea, this is the fee, but if you're going to be involved, it's double that and the like. And the idea that sometimes the owner is a meddler. You're not that figure. So is this, in a way, is this sort of the culmination of what you've been trying to build as an owner and the man who actually puts his money up?
Yeah, it's interesting, Jared, because there are plenty of owners that are happy to be passive and go along for the ride, and I respect that. You know, what I find so incredibly unique and appealing about racehorse ownership is it actually does give you a chance to be a protagonist in the sport. And, you know, I've always been very active and opinionated, and I make no apologies for that. And part of what I love is being able to back my own judgment and, if right, potentially, you know, change the course of racing history. And if wrong, well, you know, fall on my own sword. But at least I've got no one else to blame but myself. So I love how empowering racehorse ownership can be. And, you know, to be able to have an opinion and have that opinion heard, in my mind, is a very important part of ownership. I think where I draw the line is if the trainer disagrees with me, I'll never usurp them. At the end of the day, I'll make my opinion heard, but the final decision is always theirs. And I think that's a really important line to draw and one that I most certainly respect with regards to Peter Moody.
It now appears there's a path to Flemington for you. Will you be able to be there for the Cup?
Yeah, everything seems to have fallen into place in that regard, Jared. So, you know, the borders effectively open in the next 48 hours with New South Wales and Victoria. So I'll most certainly be flying in and be at the track in person. Quite remarkably, I acquired the horse on the second week of June. I acquired my interest in the horse in the second week of June, and I haven't had the chance to see him in the flesh.
Yes.
So the first thing I do when I land will be to actually get to Pakenham and spend some time with the horse in his stable. And I'm almost as excited at that prospect as I am of actually seeing him in the big race.
Yeah, that's a great prospect. Hey, would this have... So this is a different year with the changing in the international circumstances and the testing and the like. And maybe, well, probably in recent times, your eye has been offshore over to Europe to see what could have been bought. Do you think if things hadn't changed, you would have bought this horse anyway? Or would your money and attention have been committed to Europe at a time when it was captured in Queensland?
Yeah, interestingly, obviously I'm in partnership with Aussie on the vast majority of my horses, and I'm by no means very well informed when it comes to European form. So I do rely on Aussie and his network and judgment and really come into his horses in that regard. I've always been more focused on acquiring yearlings and looking at triad horses in Australia and New Zealand, and Aussie then coming on board with me. So, I don't think that would have changed anything.
Yep.
And, in this instance, I think it's not just about identifying the talent and seeing the end goal. It's also about actually being viable to acquire. And it's obviously very difficult with large groups of owners and, very emotive factors in decision-making, not just looking at things pragmatically. And in this instance, obviously, I had the fortune to sort of identify his talent quite early on, but also had a guy in the form of Steve Tregaya, who was great to deal with, and because he had bred the horse and owned the horse outright, was able to make a decision, an executive decision, with regards to the horse, which made that process a lot easier. And, it's fantastic that, Steve has remained in the horse and is, continues to be a critical and important part of the horse's story.
Bray Sokolsky is with me. What, we're 2 weeks out from the Melbourne Cup, incentivised the 6-4 favourite. It's just very elegant in a moment, but the passing of Sir Dragonet, the death of Sir Dragonet on Saturday morning, so a day that was set up to be so exciting, and you lost your Cox Plate winner out of last year. That's the literal highs and lows of racing in one day.
Yeah, they couldn't be at their more extreme, could they? It's a cliche, the highs and lows, but, when you wake up, Caulfield Cup Day with a favourite, and the first thing you see on your phone is that tragic news, it really hits home. The first thing I thought of, honestly, was the stable and the staff, because they're the people that are most close to the horse and spend every single moment with him, and I know how loved he was and by all those associated with the horse at Kieran Maher and David Eustace's stable. So, I really felt immediately for them. As a horse lover, you just hate seeing that with any racehorse, let alone, one that had given us so much joy and had so much still to give. I think for him, the hardest thing to stomach was the fact that he obviously was a stallion. And I really believe that with his racetrack performance and his absolute world-class pedigree, he had one of the strongest pedigrees on his dam side of any stallion prospect globally, that he really could have made a difference to Australian breeding, and he would have stood at one of the headline farms in the Hunter Valley, which is very rare for a middle-distance horse. And I think we really need those profile of horses to be able to produce those sort of wait for age champions, with all this focus and impetus for speed in our breeding. I really felt he was genuinely a stallion that could make a difference. So I think he's a great loss to Australian breeding moving forward. And I think that's probably the real tragedy of his passing in terms of the legacy he may have left behind in Australian racing.
So legacy is a good theme for this year's Cox Plate, Bray. Your champion mare, very elegant. Oh, just racing is personal. We're exploring that now. Have you been at all insulted by the way that she's been slighted in this Cox Plate market and then almost been dismissed is too far, but downgraded for the status that she holds as the horse of the year heading into this championship race?
Yeah, I mean, I think you have a similar connection to her like I do. It doesn't matter whether you're an owner or not. You're one, you know, you absolutely love that mare. You always have from very early days. And I think, you know, you can't help but take it as a personal affront. You know, it's like, I don't have children, Jared, but I'd imagine it's the same thing as a teacher telling your child's not good enough. So, yeah, you do take it personally and you defend her as vigorously as you can. But everyone obviously is entitled to their opinion. I genuinely believe that there were reasons why she underperformed in the Turnbull. One thing's for sure, it's not an off day because very elegant. If you look at her, she does not have off days. So I refuse to concede that, well, she may have just been off. Chris Waller has applied his, you know, formidable rigour to trying to identify what may have gone wrong. And there's sort of a litany of perspective reasons. All I can say is that a week ago, Chris was fairly bearish about her and still trying to work out, you know, how to get her 100% right. But today, post-gallop this morning, he was very bullish and glowing in his praise of how she worked. Damien said she felt like a completely different horse to what she did Turnbull Stakes Day. Damien said to me she did feel really passive and it surprised him in the yard. He said when he got on board on her Saturday morning and even more so this morning, she just felt sharp and fresh and, in his words, a different horse. Interestingly, you know, in Chris's quest to try and identify what may have happened in the Turnbull, there's been feedback from Simon Arnold, who does some fantastic work for Chris at Flemington, that he felt that she was getting her tongue too far back. And Chris is not sort of suggesting that she, you know, had swallowed her tongue on Turnbull Stakes, but it may have been a factor. So he applied the tongue tie in her work this morning and thought it made a difference. And she'll be racing for the first time in that gear come Cox Plate Day Saturday. So a very interesting little gear change from Chris. And as we know, he leaves no stone unturned on these grand finals, and I think he feels he's got the mare exactly where he wants her.
If she was a human athlete, I can imagine newspaper clippings being pasted on the stable wall just to get the idea of how she's been spoken about. So what do you feel, what's at stake for her in all that she's achieved? And I still think the best two races on the turf this year that we've seen are the Adabe races. So her best form is not terribly far away. It's in this calendar year. Would this be the culmination of all that she's done?
Yeah. You know, it's interesting, you know, when you said like plastered on the stable wall because horses can't talk or certainly aren't aware of what the feedback is about them. I think the same applies also when we talk about horses and we adulate horses and how, you know, effusive we are about great horses. We tend to be a little bit more reserved about human athletes because we're always thinking, well, we don't want to get to their head and, you know, they know how good they are. So I also think the opposite applies. It's a double-edged sword, which is fantastic in that regard for racing. And so too with the comparison of past greats, which can be a sort of an inane pursuit in some regards, but it's also a lot of fun. But with regard to her, you know, what I think the difference that would make, I mean, I think it would elevate her from a champion to a great. You know, I think that's the difference. She would be remembered as one of the true great horses of the Australian turf if she's able to win both the Caulfield Cup and a Cox Plate and, you know reach her 10th Group 1. So I think that, you know, that would probably elevate her to that status and take her to, I guess, more rarefied company. But, you know, in our minds as connections, you know, she owes us absolutely nothing. She's just been absolutely phenomenal. You know, and it almost brings a tear to my eye, to be honest, talking about her and what she's given everyone associated with her. So whatever she does on Saturday, I know one thing's for sure, she's going to do us proud.
I think my absolute favourite part at all is how we humanise the horses in our sport. Bray, it's great to chat. Good luck over, well, good luck for Saturday and over the next couple of weeks, and I'll look forward to seeing you at Flemington.
Can't wait, Jared. Thanks so much. Really enjoyed it.
Bray Sokolsky, the owner of Incentivise. A 10-horse field has been declared for the Cox Plate. Animo, the 3-year-old, has drawn the outside barrier. Zaki's drawn well in 6, very elegant in 9. So we'll give you full details of that as we go along. Andrew Voss across the Great Divide between Sydney and Melbourne. Bharat Sundaresan after Australia's win over New Zealand in the warm-up game in the T20 World Cup. Tony Dottomade is Australia's new selector. So, well, he's gone to the front line. We're all selectors today. Is Dave Warner finished? That's what's coming through a bit on the text, 0433 98 11 16. And just to put the frighteners up, Sam Edmund, we're going to ring the trade bell and just see if it has a physical reaction for him. So that's on the McCafe menu today. McCafe, our official coffee partner. Greg Carpenter on all the history that faces Incentivise with 57 kilos in 2 weeks in the Melbourne Cup.